This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Wednesday, May 1st, 2013. How much will you pay for legal weed? The Aspen Times reports that marijuana as a potential tax bonanza has Colorado lawmakers wrestling with that question. The State House advanced a taxing measure Monday to levy a pot tax at 25%, a reduction from the 30% rate lawmakers considered last week. The proposal sparked a lively floor debate over the appropriate tax rate for a drug that's never been taxed before. Democrats argued that voters want high pot taxes and that consumers will gladly pay a premium for the assurances that would come from a regulated and legal drug supply. Republicans argued that Colorado voters have a history of rejecting tax hikes, even for popular public programs, and that the public's desire for a marijuana windfall may not materialize unless the tax rate is lower. Other Republicans noted that marijuana taxes would be in addition to hefty licensing and application fees to enter the business. The result, they fear, could be the retention of a black market for reefer. The measure approved by voters last year allows not just retail pot sales, but also home marijuana growing, raising the specter of plentiful homegrown weed to compete with the taxed marijuana. The tax debate came after a largely party-line vote on a separate marijuana bill to regulate how the newly legal drug can be grown, packaged, and sold. Among other things, that bill requires potency labels, serving size limits on edible pot, and purchasing limits for out-of-state buyers. The regulation bill also revives a marijuana blood limit standard for drivers, a proposal that has failed four times in the Senate. The House voted last Monday to revive the DUI standard, and that renews the battle. A third marijuana bill awaits action in the Senate. That measure includes less controversial pot regulations, such as a new crime of providing marijuana to people under 21. Washington and Colorado, the only two states that have legalized pot for recreational use, are still awaiting federal response to the votes. Marijuana remains illegal under federal law, even for medicinal use. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, Colorado law enforcement officials sent a letter to Governor John Hickenlooper saying they are worried that the state could botch regulations for recreational marijuana. According to the Denver Post, the letter was sent by members of the Colorado Association of Chiefs of Police, the Colorado District Attorney's Council, the County Sheriffs of Colorado, and the Colorado Drug Investigators Association. The group sent the letter to Hickenlooper, leaders in both the Colorado House and Senate, State Attorney General John Southers, and, in a rather provocative move, to U.S. Attorney John Walsh. The U.S. Attorney's Office considers all marijuana illegal and could move to shut down the state's nascent system of regulated pot stores. In the letter, the officials say they fear there is, quote, the potential for the passage of marijuana laws which are a grave disservice to the public. At the Capitol, the leaders say there is a concerted effort to continue to undermine law enforcement's effort to keep our youth safe and stop diversion. As reported on KVNF and elsewhere, the debate over the regulations has become a divisive partisan affair. Among other concerns, the group say they are wary of potential efforts to weaken a bill on drug-endangered children, which proposes that children who are present in homes where marijuana is being grown could be considered victims of child abuse, even if the pot is grown in compliance with state law. That bill, Senate Bill 278, is also awaiting a debate in the full Senate. The legislature has until May 8th to approve all the bills before the session ends. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that on Monday, the Bureau of Land Management proposed a land trade that would let a billionaire add almost 1,300 acres to his ranch at the base of Mount Sopris near Carbondale. The agency's proposal contains in a preliminary environmental assessment comes a few months after Pitkin County dropped its opposition to the idea after winning additional concessions. The proposal is subject to a public comment period ending May 29th. Leslie Wexner, founder of Limited Brands, which includes Victoria's Secret and Bath & Body Works, wants to acquire acreage now dividing his 4,700-acre Two Shoes Ranch. In exchange, the BLM would get the 557-acre Sooty Ranch, which has critical big game habitat and is next to the popular Red Hill Special Recreation Area north of Carbondale. The BLM would also gain the water rights from the ranch and receive 112 acres near Mount Sopris along Prince Creek Road. That acreage already is used to access BLM roads and trails in a popular mountain bike area, but the acquisition would guarantee its ability to be used as access in the future. In addition, the BLM would transfer three parcels, totaling 201 acres on Horse Mountain in Eagle County, to the owner of the adjacent Lady Bell Ranch, with that ranch paying Wexner for the acquisition. The BLM says that while it would be exchanging 668 acres for 1,470, it is likely that land appraisals will show the transaction favors the public. Wexner has also committed to contribute $1 million for the long-term management of the BLM's newly acquired land and $100,000 for initial development of that management plan. Under the proposal, all the lands given up by the BLM would be subject to conservation easements preventing development and protecting wildlife habitat. While entities including Garfield and Eagle Counties, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and the Aspen Valley Land Trust have long supported the swap, Pitkin County initially questioned whether it's provided adequate public benefit. However, the county endorsed the idea after Wexner also agreed to place a conservation easement on 365 acres of his existing ranch to help protect deer, elk, and bighorn sheep, to give up development rights for 10 homes on his land, and move a proposed indoor riding arena to a location less visible from the Crystal River Valley, and to give the county $700,000 intended for acquiring and building a mile-long trail parallel to Prince Creek Road. Those conditions are separate from the BLM land exchange process, but contingent on its approval. The Montrose Free Press says no charges will be filed against four Delta police officers after a February excessive force complaint was turned over to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. In letters dated Sunday, District Attorney Dan Hostenspiller wrote there is insufficient evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a crime was committed, and evidence does not demonstrate that the officers committed acts that caused injury. Officers Ryan Artaz, Kent Eddy, Jesse Sanford, and Steve Furstenfeld have been on leave since the February 27th response to the Walmart parking lot in Delta. KDNK's Nelson Harvey recently interviewed High Country News editorial fellow Emily Gurin about a group of ranchers in southern Idaho who have taken firefighting into their own hands.
Wildfire affects almost everyone in the West somehow, whether it just degrades air quality or actually destroys homes and businesses. But there's one group whose entire livelihood is put at risk when a wildland fire sparks, and that's ranchers who graze their animals on western public lands. The ranchers who lease grasslands from the federal government depend on those lands to fatten up their animals cheaply. But in the wildfire hotspot of southern Idaho, an ill-timed fire can wipe out thousands of acres of grasslands in a single afternoon.
So in southwestern Idaho, because there are so many fires, there is kind of a constant risk to these ranchers that the land that they're leasing will go up in flames and they will be left without pasture for their animals.
In the current issue of High Country News, Emily Guerin writes about some Idaho ranchers whose interest in wildfires is extremely personal.
Because after a public land fire happens, the BLM doesn't let ranchers graze their cows on that land for another 2 years, and that's to let the grass recover, and ranchers therefore have an interest in seeing the land not burn in the first place.
For a long time, ranchers simply fought fires on their own, sometimes right alongside the professional BLM firefighters. But following a tragedy near Boise in 1995, in which two firefighting ranchers were killed, the BLM actually banned ranchers from the fire lines for more than 15 years. Still, ranchers are an independent bunch, so they continued fighting fires that threatened their livelihoods, especially when the BLM was stretched too thin to respond. Things came to a head in 2011 when ranchers were battling a blaze called the Blair Fire, digging fire breaks and spraying the fire down from their tractors. Guerin tells the story.
So there was this one fire in particular that they had been battling through the night, and according to one of the ranchers on the fire, this guy Charlie Lyons, he said in the morning the fire was, they thought they pretty much had it under control, and then they heard that the BLM wanted them out of there. So they left, and the fire subsequently grew to almost 40,000 acres and burned out one of the local ranchers' grazing allotments, burned a bunch of sage-grouse habitat, mule deer habitat.
Southern Idaho's ranchers were enraged, and they demanded a right to protect their grazing land. In response, the BLM founded a program to give ranchers formal wildfire training and allow them to set up their own nonprofit firefighting company to aid the BLM on public lands. So far, the program has proven tremendously popular, with scores of ranchers showing up for training sessions eager to enroll. And Guerin says it's also had an unintended consequence, improving relations between ranchers and the BLM in a region where the two don't always get along.
When the BLM and the ranchers started disagreeing over who could fight fires, it was sort of the latest in this series of tension over grazing. It's especially noticeable in far southwestern Idaho, in Owyhee County, where a number of anti-grazing and environmental groups have sued the BLM and forced the agency to redo grazing permits. And the result of that has been cutbacks for the ranchers there in terms of how many cattle they can have on the land and at what time.
At a time when federal land management agencies are coping with budget cuts under the mandatory spending reductions known as sequestration, Guerin says there's also a good chance that the so-called rangeland fire protection districts are saving the federal government money. For one thing, the ranchers work for free and use mostly their own equipment. They're just happy to have an active role in protecting their bottom lines. The program's still very young, so cost-saving figures are hard to come by. But Guerin says that just by preventing another blaze from getting out of control, Idaho ranchers are probably saving the government cash it would have spent on things like land restoration.
It's hard for them to say, yes, we've saved X amount of money. But I think it's fair to say in general that whenever you can catch a fire when it's small before it gets big, you will save the federal government money.
The initial success of the Idaho program raises questions about whether it could be exported to elsewhere in the West. Guerin points out that it's most important to train ranchers in areas that are too rural to be served by existing fire protection districts so that they can respond to house fires and rangeland fires alike in those areas. It's not clear, she says, that a more populated state like Colorado has that much uncharted territory in need of protection.
I'm not sure if Colorado, perhaps because it's more densely populated, has better fire protection already, but I think that would be a good step to understand whether or not these groups would do well here.
Still, at least for now, the BLM's success with ranchers in Idaho stands as a rare example of harmony between two Western groups, ranchers and land managers, who are so often at each other's throats. For KDNK News, I'm Nelson Harvey.
And finally, just a quick update. It looks like road conditions are snowy and slushy between here and Denver, if you happen to be headed that way. I-70 showing snow, wet, slushy, icy spots at the tunnel at Silverthorne. All the way over Vail Pass, as soon as you get past Eagle, it looks like. These conditions continue elsewhere in the state over the mountains right now. As you get east of this area and over by the divide, you will find snow, wet, slushy, and icy spots throughout the mountains of Colorado. Thank you very much for tuning in this morning. Thus concludes today's newscast for KVNF News. I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.